Welcome to The Bookshelf. I'm bookshelf producer Vern Wyndham, and I've produced this reading of Breakfast at Sally's, which is being read for us by Jeff Hazen. As you've heard already in this book, the writer is experiencing all of these people, and we have the range of the people he met as a homeless man. Tonight's episode is about Vinny. Vinny was a veteran of the Vietnam War. And in order for us to tell this story, we have to bring you Vinny's words. You will hear soon a warning about one specific word that was really common to the language of a GI in Vietnam, and that's a four-letter word that begins with F, and the way we've handled that and abbreviated that when it was a necessary part of the emotion of a story. However, there's more than that, and about 17 minutes in, we are going to start getting some graphic stories about some of the horrible things that went on in Vietnam. And anybody who is sensitive to that horror is wise to not listen either to the whole episode or from about 17 minutes on. I'll break in and give you a warning when it's about to happen, but the last third of this really is of a highly sensitive nature.
Breakfast at Sally's by Richard Lemieux. Chapter 16, Vinny. In this chapter, in a conversation between three Vietnam combat vets, we have substituted pho for a commonly used expletive integral to the language of the time. C always seemed to show up when I needed him most. It was Tuesday, and it was raining. It had poured most of the weekend and on into the week. A clear sky and my sense of hope were on a par. There was none of either in sight. When I still had a home, rainy days like this would find me watching a video, having dinner, and maybe playing cards with Sandra. Then we would light some candles, burn incense, and make love. I had been depressed most of the weekend, losing the struggle to bury those memories of the past. It surprised me how inventive my mind could be in finding ways to protect itself when I was feeling particularly challenged by homelessness. I felt like an urban cowboy, in some ways, totally out of my element, yet knowing I must adapt. I couldn't just stand there in one spot waiting for Mr. Sulu to beam me back to the bridge of the Enterprise, where the old crew would hug me and welcome me home. With no home and no money, I had found occasional cheap entertainment for Willow and me at PetSmart, and we headed there again today. We would look at the hamsters, and Willow would scratch on the glass cages. It occurred to me that the hamsters were more valuable than I was. They were housed, they were fed and watered regularly, and they were worth $19.99 apiece. Someone would buy one, take it home, name it, and even buy it some toys. We would also check out the birds and the fish. Other dogs would come in and check each other out as well, and we were always given a free dog biscuit for the road. It was warm and dry, and it took my mind off my troubles. It was a brief diversion and a short-term shelter for Willow and me. We could easily kill an hour at PetSmart. Today I thought about C as we toured this animal warehouse, and I wondered what he might say. A young child was crying by the fish tanks. "I want a new fish," the girl pleaded with her resolute mother. "I want it! I want it!" "You flushed the last three down the toilet," the mother responded. "I'm not wasting any more money on those little fish."
"How would you like to be flushed down the toilet, ma'am?" That's what C would have said.
I wondered how many millions of goldfish in New York City alone had been flushed down toilets by little girls and boys, and if any of them survived and flourished, gorging on the sludge under the Big Apple, until they reached monstrous proportions. Could goldfish 200 feet long be swimming deep in the harbor and someday, in Stephen King fashion, attack cruise ships and ferry boats? We continued sauntering down the aisles. There were turtles from Africa, snakes from the Amazon, birds from Guatemala, fish from Costa Rica, all snatched from the rocks, desert, rivers, and jungles of the world, put in cages and transported to other cages here,
to be sold and displayed in still other cages in living rooms and dens and dentist offices. All for profit. On that wonderful note, we prepared to leave PetSmart and go back out into the rainy day. To my surprise, C was standing just outside the door. "Hey there," he said. "I've been next door at the thrift shop." He lifted two plastic bags in the air. "Got some towels, dishcloths, and a few other things for the armadillo." "I just took Willow to the zoo," I said. "Would you mind giving me a lift?" C asked. We dashed through the heavy rain to the van and jumped in. "You interested in watching some TV?" C asked as we started rolling. "Sure. Let's go over to my friend Vinny's." C nodded his head to indicate the appropriate direction, and off we went. When we arrived and knocked on the door, a disembodied voice yelled, "Come in!" It was Jake from Sally's, spread out on the sofa, in his boxers, drinking a beer and watching TV. "Hey, C! And Richard! Good to see ya! Grab a seat and make yourself at home." Jake dragged himself off the couch and reached for a pair of pants. "If I've got guests, I guess I'd better put some clothes on." C and I planted ourselves in a couple of recliners. "What are you watching?" C asked Jake. "Oh, nothing, really. I've been flipping around. 600 channels and nothing good to watch." "Can I try?" C asked. Jake tossed him the remote. "I'll find something to watch. There's got to be a war on somewhere. Let's try CNN. What's the channel?" "Who knows," mumbled Jake. "You've got the remote." C continued to flip through the channels until he found CNN. One of the embedded reporters was standing in front of a U.S. Army tank on the road to Baghdad. "These tanks are really troop carriers with as many as 6 soldiers squeezed into tight quarters in the back of the vehicle," the reporter said. "It's very hot, especially in these desert conditions with the troops wearing chemical warfare protective clothing." C punched the buttons again and found the Iron Chef sushi program. A chef was slicing and dicing broccoli at amazing speed and preparing an award-winning Asian dish. The chef bowed at the waist as he received accolades from the show host. "I never liked sushi," Jake offered. C flipped back to the war. "These tanks have a special plating that protects them from just about any weapons in the Iraq arsenal, except a Scud missile," the reporter said. The picture being picked up from the satellite feed was blurred and skipped around like an old home movie, and the corresponding words came through a second after he moved his mouth, creating an eerie effect. It was like they were broadcasting from the moon in 1969. C held the remote out and hit it again. "Very good, very good," the sushi show host was talking with his mouth full, complimenting yet another guest chef on his presentation of broccoli and sushi. "Give me that thing," Jake said, motioning for the remote. I heard moaning and movement in the next room. Someone went into the bathroom and closed the door. "Fa! Oh, fa!" I heard the voice say. "I can't stand this anymore." "You okay, Vinny?" Jake yelled. "I'm just tired of it, Jake," came the muffled reply. A few minutes later, the bathroom door opened, and I heard Vinny toss himself down on the bed. "It's getting worse," Jake whispered. "It's been bad the past couple of days." Jake flipped on a MASH rerun. "I always liked this show," he said. "Oh, God, please make it stop," Vinny moaned. "Please make it stop." "Vinny, you'd better eat something," Jake said. "You've got to eat, man. You want me to make you a bologna and cheese sandwich?" Vinny just moaned. "Nothing you can really do," Jake said, looking at me. I could see the concern in his eyes. This was a death watch. Vinny had colon cancer. He had constant diarrhea and spent half his time in the bathroom. "You had better eat," Jake repeated, rolling over on the sofa and directing his voice toward the bedroom. "You want me to make you some tea?" "Fa, Jake! I can't keep it in me. What's the use?" Vinny yelled. "You'd better get your lazy ass out of bed and move around," Jake yelled back, or you're just going to die right there in that bed. Fuck you, Jake! Vinny spat back. Then he lapsed into silence. The harshness of Jake's words barely concealed his anguish over his friend's misery. Jake was staying with Vinny during his ordeal. Both had been homeless. Jake still was. The government had helped Vinny get a small apartment after it became obvious that his cancer was so advanced that he was going to die on the streets. "You got anything that might help, Vinny?" Jake asked C. "We can try," C said. "Richard, can I borrow your keys? I need to get something out of the van." I tossed the keys over to C, and he went out briefly. He returned a couple of minutes later with his duffel bag and took out a small baggie of weed. He found his pipe, and then he headed for Vinny's bedside. Jake and I focused back in on MASH. The smell of marijuana wafted into the living room. I could hear C talking about the Lord of the Rings. "I like that a lot," Vinny said. "Jake brought the video back one night." "Did you like the wizard Gandalf?" C asked. "Did you see the end when he fell into the fiery abyss?"
"Yeah, what great graphics," Vinny said. "Is the second one out on video yet? I'd really like to see it, but I can't go out."
C's weed seemed to be easing Vinny's pain, and every second of comfort was precious. Jake was humming along with the MASH theme when Vinny called out, "You make that sandwich yet, Jake?" Jake laughed. "Oh, now you're hungry." "No, but I'll do it now." He headed for the fridge. "You want a sandwich, Richard?" "Sure," I said, "if you've got enough." "We've got plenty." Jake took the bologna, cheese, and mayonnaise out of the fridge and grabbed the bread. He dipped the knife into the mayo and started spreading. Vinny and C came out of the bedroom. "You want a bologna sandwich, C?"
"Or some sushi?" Jake joked.
Vinny looked like a ghost, standing there in his white shorts and socks. He was pale and fragile-looking. His hair was mostly gone. His legs were swollen to about twice their normal size. "Let's watch a movie," he said. "What have you got? How about Something About Mary? I know we've got that. That's funny." I reached out and offered my hand. "My name is Richard," I said. "Glad to meet you. Something About Mary. I think I've seen that. Isn't that the one where he accidentally kills her dog?" I asked. "That's it," Vinny said. The mention of dogs reminded me that Willow had been in the car for quite a while and probably need to do her business by now. "I'll be right back," I said. "I've got to take my dog for a walk." As I walked out the door, a thought struck me. I turned and asked Vinny, "Hey, do you mind if I bring my little dog in after a walk?"
"Does she bite?" he asked.
"No, but she might lick you to death."
"That would be good," Vinny said. "Bring her in."
Willow and I took our walk in the alley behind the apartment complex. She peed at the base of all 8 dumpsters. I thought about what I had just witnessed. Here was C, bringing his medicine bag of weed to give a man some brief comfort from a living hell. He was going to do what no doctor could legally do in this state. Willow and I climbed the stairs to the apartment. She was excited because she knew she was going inside. She burst into the room and headed straight for Vinny, who was sitting on the couch. She licked his face until he pushed her down. She settled into his lap like they were old friends. "Could this little dog sniff out the sickness?" I wondered.
"Nice dog," Vinny said. "What's her name?"
"Willow," I said. Vinny seemed content to sit and pet her. Jake grabbed the video and pushed it into the VCR. C reached into his bag and got some rolling papers and weed and rolled a few joints, which he then passed around the room.
"You want one of these, Richard?" he asked.
"No, I never got the hang of it," I said. "Thanks anyway."
"That's what I like about him," C said. "He hangs out with me, but he doesn't smoke all my weed."
"I tried it in college," I said, "back at Ohio State nearly 40 years ago. I always thought it smelled like somebody was burning dog poop."
"Remember Cheech and Chong?" Jake said, nearly choking with laughter. "Remember that big black dog that ate their stash?
Then the dog took a dump with the cannabis in it? Yeah, I remember that movie, C laughed. Then they rolled it into a big doogie, Jake said. Cheech called it a Labrador, and they smoked it. I tried weed, though, I said, beginning my story again when the laughter subsided. I never got high, but I did it because I was trying to bed this long-haired blonde from Chagrin Falls who wore crepe dresses and tie-dyed shirts. A group would meet at her pad, take off most of their clothes, and get into a circle on the floor. They would light up their joints and say things like, "Make love, not war." I would take a drag, hold it in, and then nothing. So I faked it. I'd say, "Good weed, man," and start making up stories about whales coming to me in a vision and sharing knowledge about people who lived under the seas. It seemed to impress them. They all laughed and then took a hit on their joints. They were getting pretty stoned. "Hey, there are more sandwiches on the counter," Jake said, "and there's milk in the fridge, if you want some." "I'm feeling a little better. Maybe I can sleep through the night," Vinny said, hopefully. At about midnight, there was a rap on the door, and Lenny stuck his head in. "Anybody here?" he called. "Lenny, welcome," Jake said. "What's up?" "Nothing, man," Lenny replied. "I was down at the tavern playing some pool, and I was looking for some stuff, man. You got any?" "I got a little left," C said, passing the plastic bag to Lenny. Lenny was from Jersey. He was a fast talker. He communicated in short, rapid-fire sentences, liberally laced with the F-word. He hadn't been back to his native Jersey in 30 years, but you would swear that he had just left yesterday. His accent was quintessentially Jersey, circa 1960. He demanded your attention when he talked to you. If he didn't get what he thought was the proper level of focus, he would move closer until you did, so close you could feel his breath. Then he would tilt his head as he leaned into your face. Lenny rolled his joint quickly and lit up. "Fuck good stuff," he pronounced, exhaling. We all sat staring at the screen for a while, randomly commenting on the film while discussing topics ranging from managing testosterone to how to score a good lay. Finally, Vinny struggled up from the couch. "I think I'll lie down," he said. "I'm getting tired." "Thanks, C." "Sure," said C. "No problem." "Good night, Vinny," Jake said. "If you need anything, just call." "Good night. Nice to meet you," I said, as Vinny headed for the bedroom.
We will briefly interrupt this reading to let you know that from now until the end of this episode, it is material of a highly sensitive and often disturbing nature about some of the details of the atrocities of the Vietnam War. If that is significant to you to not experience that, then you're invited to not listen to the rest of this episode.
The angels of death were already gathering in that room, just waiting for the last sigh, the final breath, the end of life. There was no wife, no woman, no nurse to wipe away the sweat from his brow. Just a few buddies hanging around for company. There was comfort in company. "I've seen this a bunch of times," Jake said, flipping off the VCR. "Put on some effing porn," Lenny said. Coverage of the war in Iraq came on while Jake turned off the movie. Coalition troops were experiencing heavy resistance from forces loyal to Saddam Hussein in the town near Kabul in southern Iraq, announced the embedded correspondent. "There are casualties."
"I say nuke the effers,"
Lenny exclaimed.
"Arabs, send them all to Allah, man."
Reports from the front say Iraq forces surprised a coalition convoy. 6 American soldiers have been reported killed in action. 15 more have been wounded.
"Hell, those guys have it easy, man," Lenny said. "It's not like Nam."
"For real," Jake said, reaching around and taking out the rubber band that held his ponytail in place. His hair fell. It must have been 10 inches long. "I was in Vietnam, too, crawling through the rice paddies."
"Yeah, half my platoon got out of an effing jungle in one day," Lenny said. "I was in the Marines.
We were the first into the villages after they bombed the hell out of them. A lot of it was cleanup after the bombings. We would come in and shoot the ones who didn't have an effing chance. Men, women, and children. We just shot them in the head and put them out of their misery. I was in the Special Forces with Lieutenant Callie. When they picked us out for duty, they asked, "Who here is willing to shoot his own mother in the head?" About half the guys stood up.
"You shot children?" C asked.
"Fuh, yes, man," Lenny replied. "Hell, some of them had their arms and legs blown off. Some had their guts hanging out. They were just going to lie there and die. I was 17. People were dying around me every day. My best friend, Scooter, he never came back. I didn't think I would come back alive either. If my captain said, 'Shoot him in the head,' I shot him in the head. I'm a Sicilian from New Jersey. My captain was Sicilian. He told us if we didn't shoot him, he would shoot us. You didn't mess with that fuck." "I have nothing good to say about that hellhole," Jake said. "I learned to smoke dope there, to shoot up. Actually, I would say I have one good thing to say about Nam. I saw Bob Hope there in Da Nang. You know, he came over to entertain the troops. He was good. He had this joke. Technically, this is not a war. So when you get shot, technically you're not shot," Jake said. "If they hadn't sent me home, I'd be 6 feet under."
"Sent you home?" Lenny asked.
"Yeah, they court-martialed me." "I thought you knew that, Lenny," Jake replied. "I'm a deserter. I left my post. It was near some little village. A colonel with a burr up his butt decided to go bust some heads on a Sunday and took two of us in his jeep. We parked at the edge of the village. They left me to guard the jeep. 'Shoot anything that moves, private,' the colonel ordered as they left. 'We'll be back in 15 minutes,' he barked. Hell, they were gone for 3 hours. I was sick, man. I had the flu or something. It was hot, man. Sweat was just pouring off me. I heard a noise in the jungle. I saw the trees move. 'Halt!' I yelled. 'Come out with your hands up or I'll shoot.' The bushes moved again. I swear I heard a gun cock. I panicked and fired a round into the jungle. I heard crying. It was a woman crying. I leveled my rifle toward the sound as the woman carrying a baby walked out of the jungle. She walked toward me with her knees buckling. She was bawling. Blood was streaming from her shoulder. Her hands were covered with blood, and she walked toward me, kneeled down, and laid the baby at my feet, and then covered her face with her blood-soaked hands. The baby was dead. I had killed her baby. I broke. I tossed my machine gun into a ditch, left the jeep behind, and started walking back down the road. I swore I would never kill another living thing, not even a fly. The colonel and the guys caught up with me several miles down the road. He pistol-whipped me, nearly killed me. He had cut off the head of a gook he was interrogating and stuffed it into a duffel bag. He pulled it out and held it over me. "I ought to do this to you, you asshole," he screamed. Blood from the head was dripping on my face. They took me back to camp. I was put in the brig for a while. Some doctor took pity on me and sent me home to Bremerton. I got a dishonorable discharge. The colonel eventually got a Purple Heart. That son of a bitch lost both of his legs." Lenny's eyes were filled with tears. "Killing women and children isn't something I'm proud of," he said. "Hell, at 17, with your lieutenant screaming, 'Kill the fuck!' and everybody shooting and yelling, that's what you do. You're 17. There's a lot of difference between 17 and 57. We were killing the enemy." Lenny leaned forward in his chair as he looked at Jake. "Don't you think I have nightmares?" His voice trailed off. Jake got off the couch. "Want a cigarette?" he asked, holding out his neatly rolled cigarette in his hand. "Sure," Lenny said. "When I got back, my family didn't want anything to do with me," Jake said, lighting Lenny's cigarette. "My girlfriend left me. I bounced around town drinking and smoking pot. When the little money I had was gone, I lived in the woods or lived in the streets and ate out of dumpsters for years. I still do. In fact, what time is it? I'm thinking about going dumpster diving. You coming with me, C?"
"Sure," C replied.
"How about you, Richard?" Jake asked. "I had never been dumpster diving before. I don't know.
I said. It can be profitable, Jake coaxed. I found $3.75 in pennies 2 nights ago. People throw away good stuff. You'd be surprised. The idea of climbing into a dumpster at 3 in the morning didn't appeal to me. But I was broke. Okay, I'll go along, I said. Good, you can drive. I know a good place to start. It's on the east side of town, behind Safeway, Jake said.
How about you, Lenny? C asked.
Fuh, no. I ain't crawling around in no stinking dumpster, Lenny exclaimed. I'll stay here and watch some porn, and keep an eye on Vinny in case he needs anything, okay?
Jake tossed the remote to Lenny.
What channel has the porn? Lenny asked. I've got cable. I'm not used to this DirecTV BS.
Just hit 177, Jake said. That's the Hustler channel.
Lenny hit the remote buttons and smiled as two women doing a portly guide appeared.
That's what I like, Lenny cheered.
Let's go, Jake said, grabbing his coat.
I had missed the NOM experience. The closest I ever got was riding the bus to the processing center in Columbus when I was in college. There were 6 black guys and me. They all went. They were too poor to have the protection of college. Unlike Lenny and Jake, it was only 1 day out of my life. I went right back to Ohio State. As we left the death watch, it occurred to me that we were all homeless in some way. It seemed to me that we were all psychically frozen somewhere, the half-dead, the on-the-way-to-dead, the blessedly dead, and at that moment, I wasn't sure which one defined me best. What better time to be initiated into the art of dumpster diving?
At this point, we must break off our reading. You've been hearing Breakfast at Sally's by Richard Lemieux. Copyright 2009. It is read with the permission of Skyhorse Publishing of New York. Join us next time on the bookshelf for Breakfast at Sally's. The bookshelf is produced and edited by Vern Windham. I'm Jeff Hazen.